From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, November 2nd, 2018. And on this day, things get testy during the final gubernatorial debate before the election. The backlog in Boston's immigration court is spiking. Why, and who feels the negative impact of longer wait times? That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
While the debates in Maine's governor's race have been relatively low-key, even congenial, the final televised debate on Portland station WGME Thursday evening was anything but. As Mel Leary reports, the tense exchanges were focused on TV attack ads aired in recent days.
For most of the election season, the TV ads coming from the candidates for governor had matched the tone of the campaign itself, emphasizing issues and trying to sell viewers on the experience of the candidates. But early in the week, the Republican Party started running an ad claiming that Democrat Janet Mills had agreed to a plea bargain that allowed a deputy sheriff charged with child sex offenses to avoid jail time. Mills says a jury acquitted the deputy and that the judge had made it clear that her office could not retry the case. She also responded with an ad attacking Republican Sean Moody for flip-flopping on abortion and that he had settled a legal complaint from an employee alleging employment discrimination. In Thursday's debate, Mills defended the ad.
8 years ago, he said he was pro-choice. Now he's saying he's not pro-choice. It's fair game to point out that somebody's inconsistent on issues as important as that.
Here's the important point for the Maine people to think about. If Janet Mills is going to attack one of the most reputable fathers, family figures, community members, business people in the state of Maine, is going to attack me, what do you think she's going to do to you and run on the state government?
Moody went on to demand an apology from Mills for the ad, which he says is slanderous and untrue. Mills responded by pointing to the Republican Party ad aimed at her.
And I think you ought to apologize for going right in front of the camera yourself personally and attacking my character,
Sean,
my integrity.
I don't know why you don't call on your friends in the Republican Party, Jason Savage and folks like that, to take that ad down. You know that it's untruthful, so why not ask them to take it down?
Independent Terry Hayes decried the use of negative ads and repeated her pledge to work with both parties to solve the state's problems.
To date, as of this afternoon, combined, more than $250,000 have been spent by both campaigns as negative attacks on me. I figure you folks are smart enough to see through that stuff. I am not going to respond to the details. I've never run a negative ad, and I never will.
There have been no apologies over the ads that provoked the sharp exchanges, and both are still on the air. Independent Alan Caron did not participate in the debate, having withdrawn his candidacy on Monday when he endorsed Mills. But his name will still be on the ballot. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Prices for heating oil across Maine have at last begun to stabilize. Lisa Smith, a senior planner with the governor's energy office, says loss of market speculation over potential shortages due to sanctions against Iran led to major spikes in the price of crude, but those anxieties have since eased.
Prices have declined probably $10 a barrel, so that's at least stopped heating oil prices from increasing.
But Mainers are still paying about 16% more for their heating oil than last season. The current statewide average cash price for number two heating oil is $3.02 per gallon, the same as a week ago. Kerosene is a penny higher at $3.62 per gallon. Propane prices continue to creep upward. Smith says that's mostly due to low supplies available in the Northeast. The backlog of cases in immigration courts is steadily increasing nationally, and it has been for years. In Boston's immigration court, the backlog is spiking, up 76% between October 2016 and this past July. That's the second largest increase in the country. WBUR's Shannon Dooling takes a look at some of the factors behind the jump and who bears the brunt of the longer wait times.
It's 8:30 on a recent morning in Boston's immigration court. The federal prosecutor for the Department of Homeland Security pushes a cart loaded with case files into a courtroom. She wedges the cart between a wall and a desk and heaves a pile of paperwork onto the tabletop. Another day full of master calendar hearings is about to get underway. For an immigrant who's fighting deportation or applying for asylum, a master calendar hearing is their initial court appearance. It kickstarts the rest of their proceedings, and they usually walk out with a date for their next court appearance. In Boston, those dates are being set further and further out, thanks to the nearly 27,000 cases now pending.
The growth in the immigration court backlog has a dramatic impact on our clients.
Sarah Sherman-Stokes is a Boston-based immigration attorney and a clinical instructor at Boston University's School of Law. She says a bigger backlog can mean longer wait times. According to TRAC, a national immigration database at Syracuse University, the average wait time in Boston is around 2 years. That's gradually been ticking up over the last several years. Sherman Stokes says that's a problem for many of her clients, especially those seeking asylum after experiencing tremendous amounts of trauma in their home country.
The longer amount of time that passes between the incident that happened and them having to retell it in a courtroom in an adversarial setting, the more difficult it becomes for them to do that with accuracy. And even small inconsistencies can be the basis for an asylum denial.
In September, Attorney General Jeff Sessions set a goal of increasing the number of immigration judges in the country by 50%. The thought is that new recruits will help tackle the massive backlog of cases that continues to grow nationally. But simply adding more judges might not be enough to put a dent in the backlog anytime soon. Dana Lee Marks is an immigration judge in San Francisco and the former head of the National Association of Immigration Judges.
While there is now an almost frantic effort to increase the numbers of immigration judges, it takes a very long time to unwind a backlog. And that's because as cases get older and remain on the docket longer, they generally become more complicated.
Evidence becomes stale, witnesses are hard to locate, and individual circumstances change. Maybe so much time has passed that a person is now eligible for a different status than they originally applied for. All of this, Marks says, means the longer a case sits on a docket, the longer it can take to adjudicate. And there's another issue to consider, Marks says, as more first-time immigration judges are coming on board.
In all fairness to someone new coming in, they're entitled to have a learning curve and to take time to do it right. And with repetition, they will do it right and faster. But I would assume that that has an impact, again, just one small piece of a multifaceted puzzle.
This is especially relevant in Boston, where 4 of the 8 immigration judges were appointed within the last 2.5 years. And on top of that, 3 of those 4 new judges previously worked in Boston as attorneys for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Susan Church, an immigration attorney in Cambridge, says that matters.
Where 3 of the last 4 hires have been former prosecutors, these judges have to decline jurisdiction over any case that they have handled or worked on while they were prosecutors in that office. So it really doesn't help the backlog because then that case has to go to a different judge and start the process all over again.
Former government prosecutors turned immigration judges must recuse themselves from any cases they touched as prosecutors. Same goes for former private immigration attorneys who become judges. Those cases then end up on another judge's docket, and the immigrant's court case starts all over again. It's difficult to know how often judges recuse themselves on these grounds. The Executive Office for Immigration Review, the oversight agency for the country's immigration courts, doesn't track recusals. Marks, the immigration judge in California, says the backlog reflects a fundamental imbalance.
The fact that resource allocations to ICE prosecutions so far outweigh the resources allocated to building the courts.
Until the court system grows commensurate with the enforcement system, she says, backlogs will likely continue to rise and immigration judges will keep playing catch-up in Boston and across the country. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Shannon Dooling in Boston.
The Portland Press Herald is reporting that Maine's growing elder population may contribute to higher borrowing costs for the state. The paper cites a report from Fitch Ratings. It says by 2026, a quarter of Maine adults will be 65 or older. Fitch points out that older adults work less and spend less. That, in turn, could weaken state revenues and the government's ability to repay bonded debt, which could lead Fitch and other agencies to lower Maine's bond rating. That, in turn, could raise borrowing costs. Officials in Bucksport plan to repair the town's dock to attract more ships and recreational vehicles. The Bangor Daily News reports Bucksport Harbor Master Michael Ormsby has outlined $70,000 in repairs and maintenance work. Town officials hope to replace wooden floats and extend the main dock to 400 feet. Mayor David Keene believes the improved dock could help tourism-based businesses and eventually drum up revenue. The town also plans to replace a former paper mill site with a salmon farm. An Environmental Protection Agency planning grant is funding an engineering study on the site. More train runs from Boston are coming to the towns of Freeport and Brunswick. The Northern New England Passenger Rail Authority, which manages Amtrak's Downeaster passenger rail service from Boston to Maine, says the new train service will begin on November 12th. The Downeaster currently runs 5 round trips between Portland and Boston, and 3 of them extend to Freeport and Brunswick. 2 additional round trips will service Freeport and Brunswick on weekdays, and 1 additional trip will be added on weekends. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Friday, November 2nd, 2018. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell, Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, Mark Simpson, and our digital team, Ahmed Morin.